this chapter really deals with leadership. That's what we're going to see here. Paul the Apostle as a leader. But he's a leader in a different way. He's not a leader in a church at this point. He's not in a church. He's a prisoner. He's going to be on a ship. He's on a ship of 276 people. Him and two other men are the only Christians that are identified for us. So you have Paul and two other believers, and really they're prisoners or the friends of a prisoner. And then you have sailors who aren't the most spiritual men and definitely not godly by any means. Some of the most debased and wicked people of Paul's day. You've got some very foul pagans on board. You've got workers, you've got people traveling throughout the Roman Empire, you've got people that are manning the ship, you've got soldiers, centurions. This is a mixed group for sure, and a mixed group of pagans. This is what Paul is brought into, and we're going to see his remarkable leadership qualities and characteristics. And I've entitled the message, "The Characteristics of a Good Leader." The Characteristics of a Good Leader. And if you are taking notes, I want you to write down the word lead. Lead. And I want to make this morning an acronym for us because there's four main points I want to hit. And I want to make an acronym out of the word lead. L is going to stand for learned. L is going to stand for learned. A learned leader. And we'll talk about what that means. And we'll find it here in the text. E is going to stand for ear. An ear to hear the Lord. And we'll talk about that when we get there. And A is going to stand for alert. Alert. Realizing what's going on around you. And then D is going to stand for demonstrate. A leader that demonstrates and not declares. And so I think we're going to see this. I'm pulling these four points from the four times Paul speaks on the ship. And I think it's going to be quite interesting for us. So let's jump into it and look at this. Verse 1. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some of the other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. First thing you notice right away is it's the word "we" is here again. Remember the "we" sections in Acts. Well, they started again. Paul the apostle sometimes is in the third person, or Luke is writing in the third person, or sometimes he's writing in the first person. At this point, Luke is with him. Now, Luke has been in probably Caesarea and really the land of Israel for the last 2 years at least, as the apostle Paul was in prison there in Caesarea. Remember, Paul had been in prison for at least 2 years in Caesarea, and that's where he's probably gathering his data and his information for his letters that he's writing. The Gospel of Luke starts out with, "Luke, I'm going to write to you the things that I've researched by eyewitness accounts, most accurately recorded." And he goes on in his prologue there to the book of Luke, which is really the prologue as well to the book of Acts, because it's volume 1 and 2. And so it's in this time he's gaining probably a lot, especially for the gospel, the things that happened in the early years of the church, the things dealing with the land of Israel. And so that's what he's probably been doing. Now Paul is ready to be shipped off to Rome. Remember, Paul has appealed to Caesar, and so he's got to go to Rome. And so it was decided that we should sail. Luke is with them. And I think that's important. Now, we're going to find here in verse 2, it says, "So entering a ship of Adramedian, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us." So now we're introduced to another man, this man Aristarchus, who's been mentioned already in Acts, and we find that he's one of Paul's traveling companions from Thessalonica, another Christian. So we have two Christians. We have Luke from the "we" section. We know Luke is there. And we have Aristarchus with Paul. Now, there are two main theories of how these men were able to travel with Paul. Either they became Paul's slaves, and that's a possibility that they could become Paul's slaves. And Paul, as a Roman citizen, he's yet not condemned for the crime. He's not yet charged with anything. Could have his slaves travel with him. And so these men could do that and become the slaves of the Apostle Paul. The other thing is they could actually be prisoners themselves. We do know Aristarchus is named in some of Paul's epistles as a fellow prisoner. So that's definitely a possibility that Aristarchus was a prisoner. Luke, though, isn't so much named as a prisoner. There's another theory as well, besides the two main ones, is that they simply got on the ship at their own will and paid their own fare. Realize that the ancient ships, they didn't have cruise liners. These weren't these big, giant, beautiful cruise liners. Now, we're going to learn that there's 276 people on board. So there's a lot of people on this ship. And the reality, though, is this ship is really going to be, at least the second ship, we're going to see two ships, they're going to be transporting wheat. And the second ship, the one that Paul's going to really be on the majority of the time, is one from Alexandria, which Alexandria is down there in Egypt. And Egypt was known as the breadbasket to the Roman Empire, meaning they fed the Roman Empire much bread because of the wheat that came out of Egypt around the Nile and things of that sort. And so there's these ships coming out of Alexandria, these big wheat ships that are carrying wheat. And if you wanted to jump on board, go somewhere, you could pay a fare and you could sit out on the deck there and be a part and get a free ride. But it wasn't like a cruise liner. You got a cabin, you go down, you hang out, you sleep in your bunk. And I want us to kind of try to paint a little bit of a picture for us today of really what's happening, what's going on in this whole ship here, because it's so far removed from our culture and from what we would think of if we were to go on a ship. We're talking about a wooden ship. We're talking about a ship with a mainsail. We're talking about a ship that has oars coming out the side of it. You're talking about a ship that can be broken up very easily in a storm. And you're talking about a ship that probably doesn't even have a restroom facility. You're talking about a ship that doesn't have all the modern conveniences that we would think of. Cooking on the ship could be quite interesting. It's not like they got a stove down there. I mean, they have some kind of a stove, but probably more of an open fire kind of thing or some kind of oven that they would make, but very, very ancient and very different than our day and age. And so here's two men with the Apostle Paul possibly getting on with him. It says, before we leave these two verses, it says that they were given to a centurion named Julius of the Augustan regiment. This ship sailed from Adramidium. It says we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia, and Aristarchus was with us. Let's go on, verse 3. And the next day, we landed at Sidon. And Julius treated Paul kindly, that is the centurion that's over Paul, and gave him liberty to go to his friends and to receive care. So we find that Paul has already found favor in the eyes of the centurion. They go along the coast of Asia. And again, I don't know if you can see this, but here they are. They go from Sidon, and you're going to see they're going to travel all through this region, and they're just going to kind of go along the coast. We're going to talk about that in a minute, why they did that, because of the time they were traveling. Why wouldn't they, if they were going to travel, if this boat's going to travel really here from the port of Caesarea, which is where it starts, and make its way over there to the tip of modern-day Turkey, which is Paul's day Asia, why wouldn't it just go straight across? We're going to find because of the winds and the storms and the season that they're traveling. So they just kind of creep along the coast and make their way around, and that's how they're going to get there. Now, when they get to Sidon, it's interesting here. He says that the centurion Julius treated Paul kindly and let him go see his friends to receive care, probably sending a Roman soldier with the Apostle Paul. We realize that if Paul escaped from Julius's hand, Julius would be charged with whatever Paul's case came to, and Paul would be charged with. So it's really a risk to let the prisoner out. But he really trusted. I mean, it's awesome to see how the Apostle Paul somehow gained favor with Julius here. I think it's important for us to see that Paul wasn't a threat to him by any means. He wasn't fearful Paul was going to run or flee. But Paul was very humble. Paul was very submissive. And Paul was very workable with the authority that was over him. That authority, that the governing authority that was over him. He was very honorable, as he talks about in Romans chapter 13, to honor those that are in authority, that God's put him there. Even though Paul was innocent, he knew that in his own heart. He knew he'd done nothing wrong, and he had been accused falsely. At the same time, he was honorable and respectful to the authority that was given over him. And so he had freedom there, and he received care. Probably the believers in Sidon, he went and received care from them. They probably fed him and fellowshipped with him. And they probably sent with him some finances to go on his way. Because again, the Roman soldiers wouldn't be responsible to feed Paul. He would have to take care of his own needs, even as when he was in prison in Caesarea. Verse 4, and when we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus. Again, that's the island right there, island of Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And now we're starting to get into this idea of how the seas are at this time. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra and a city of Lycia. Then the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board. So here at Myra, they switch ships from this one that they're on to now an Alexandrian one. And this is the one that is obviously important, because this is the one that Paul finds himself almost dead on, but the Lord spares him. So they get on this ship, they board it, verse 7, and when we had sailed slowly many days, notice that, sailed slowly many days, and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, the winds not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salome. So what we see here is, and again, if you have a map in the back of your Bibles, you can look at that if you want. What we have here is we have the Apostle Paul has left Caesarea. They went to Sidon. They went over to Myra here, and they sailed for many days between here and Cnidus. That is the island right there. And they sail for many days with difficulty. And they try then to make their way to the island of Crete off of Salome. And that's where we are. So they're making their way over. And we're going to see they're going to get themselves to the region Fairhaven, which is a port there, a harbor on the island of Crete. Let's pick it up there in verse 8. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fairhaven near the city of Lycia. So here we have them coming to this place called Fairhaven. Now this is where the story really begins to pick up here. And this is where we want to start honing in on and looking at. And in verse 9 will be one of our first points here on leadership, or the word lead. And this is where our L comes in, learned. Let's look at it. Now when much time had been spent and sailing was dangerous because the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with much disaster and loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could come, could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening towards the southwest and the northwest, and winter there. And so here they've made their way to Crete. It says, and much time had passed, and sailing had become dangerous. It was very dangerous right now. They're at Fairhaven. It's very dangerous to sail because the fast was already over. The fast is the Day of Atonement on the Jewish calendar. And that fast would really indicate what time it was, what season it was. It was probably in September. And in September would be the time that you would begin not to travel. From about September to February would be a time that you wouldn't travel much on the sea, because of the danger. Everyone would port the ships, and like it says there, that they might winter. They wanted, verse 12, to winter in the port there of Phoenix, which is, again, just down the coast there. There's Fairhavens. It's a better port, a bigger port, and it's in a better location facing towards the southwest, it says there, and the east and the northwest. And it's better for the winds and things for the boat to harbor. But more importantly than that is, well, it's a bigger city. And if you're going to have to spend months in a city, this crew and these people, they want to have a place that's bigger than Fairhaven because for their own luxury. And so some of maybe their own desires are pushing them on to go. And we find here in Paul as a prisoner and him being a leader, we find here that Paul is going to speak up at this point. Now, interesting that a prisoner even has a voice, but it is possible, because Paul was a Roman citizen, that he did have a stronger voice than maybe some other people there on the ship. And so he was able to speak up, and it says there in verse 10, it says, Paul saying, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo of the ship, but also of your lives." So Paul speaks up here. Now, this is where we want to talk about one of the first points in leadership is that you need to be someone that's learned. What do I mean by learned? I mean that you need to be someone that's experienced with life. You know, a good leader isn't just someone that is learned theologically. A good leader isn't someone that's just learned theologically. Not that that's not important. We know Paul was learned theologically, but he was a little more well-rounded than just a man that had knowledge and understanding. He was someone that had experience out in the open sea. You know, if you calculate from Acts chapter 9, where Paul's life really begins in Acts, to Acts chapter 28, all of Paul's sea voyages in the book of Acts, you would calculate up to about 3,000 miles of sea voyages. This man had traveled. That's just recorded in Acts, and there's far more that Paul did than is recorded in Acts. In fact, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 25, Paul says there that he had been in a shipwreck three times. Now, by the time you write 2 Corinthians, it's way earlier than this time. He's not even talking about this shipwreck because he wrote the book before he went into this shipwreck. And so three times I'd been in shipwreck. He said in a night and day I'd spent in the deep. Paul was experienced on the open sea. And why was Paul experienced on the open sea? Paul was experienced not only on the open sea, Paul was experienced in shipwrecks on the open sea. Paul had experienced spending a whole night and a day out in the open sea, not on a boat, but probably hanging onto a piece of a broken boat. He says, "I spent a night and a day in the deep," speaking of shipwrecks. You know, why? Why was Paul there? Because Paul was the kind of Christian and the kind of leader that went and did and was involved in the work of the Lord. You know, the open sea was a very, very dangerous place. We know of the Cape Malea. Cape Malea is there on the tip of Greece. It was called the graveyard to ships because so many people died there. Then you have, which our text is going to make mention of, the Sardis Sands down here on the tip of Africa. It's called the Sardis Sands. There's these reefs down there and sandbars down in the Sardis Sands, and that was called the graveyard of many ships. You can go back and find ancient writings of the sailors, and they said if you're going to sail to Cape Malea that you need to make out your will before you travel that because it was such a dangerous place. That's why we talked about when we looked at the port to Corinth there, how the Corinth Canal has now been built and that ships would come in. In Paul's day, the Corinth Canal wasn't there, and that is, there's a harbor on both sides. It was a one-mile isthmus that went across it, and they'd actually put boats over that one-mile isthmus, that piece of land that's a mile. They would actually take small boats and roll them over there so they didn't have to sail Cape Malea because of how dangerous it was. The bigger ships they'd bring into one side of the port, unload the cargo, and put it on in a boat on the other side of the port and ship it out so they could stay closer to the land, not get out into the open sea, and try to sail Cape Malea. And we're going to see that Paul is going to be out in that region around Cape Malea. You can see right there on the line where the Apostle Paul will be. And so this man was experienced. He was learned in practical life. He had practical experience of life. And that is something that a good leader needs. And again, a leader doesn't mean a leader like Paul only. It doesn't mean a leader maybe like myself as a pastor, as a leader. But all of us are called to be leaders. We're all called to lead people to Christ. If you're a Christian today, there is some degree of leadership you need to have. And so I think there's these things we can glean from here that we might be well-rounded people. We might be experienced with more than our books and our church, but experience with life. And that doesn't mean you got to go and get involved in sin so you can sympathize with the sinner. That's not what I'm saying. So let's not go there. But I'm talking about just life. You might know some things. Maybe keep up on current events. And you might be aware of what's happening in our world, what's going on, a little bit experience with doing different things and working, you know, in different fields and be able to connect with different people. And you know, you're going to find that when you come into the area of ministry and you come into the area of witnessing and serving the Lord, those things come in very handy as they become tools that you can use to really find that common sense that we need, the wisdom of God to do the things that might be set before us. Here's Paul, a prisoner on a ship, and he says, "Hey guys, I don't think this is wise." Now, it's not just speaking out of ignorance, some prisoner, "Oh, be quiet." This guy is well traveled. This guy has been there. This guy has been in shipwrecks. This guy might be more experienced than some of the sailors on that ship because of the things he's done. But why has he done the things he's done? Because of his love for Jesus Christ. Because of his passion to see the lost one. And you're going to find that as you begin to step out and you begin to lead and you begin to go and you begin to lead people to Christ and you begin to say, "Lord, I'm your vessel. I'm available." It's interesting. You're going to find that the Lord is going to cause you to be learned in all kinds of different areas. And I think it's a very, very important principle that we can glean here from the Apostle Paul. So they don't listen to him. Verse 11 says, "Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship." And you would think that would be normal. The helmsman, the one that would drive the ship and lead it, the owner, the captain there of the ship, said, "We think we can go." The majority, verse 12, is well advised to set sail from there. I'd say for more of selfish reasons, for their own physical comforts, which is going to backfire on them greatly. Verse 13, let's go on. It says, "And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that we had obtained the purpose, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete." So they waited. The south winds began to blow. The sailors said, "This is perfect. This is what we're looking for. No problem. Let's go over to Phoenix. Again, we're just going down the coast of Crete, and we're going to port somewhere else." But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called Euricadellum, so that the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, so we let her drive. And running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. And he goes on here. Let's look at this. Verse 14, it says, "Not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose." The word tempestuous headwind is a word, is from the Latin word where we get our word typhoon. It speaks of a great storm. It speaks of a wind that is circling. In fact, we might know it as a tropical cyclone. A tropical cyclone is a wind that is twirling out on the waters that is turning at about 74 miles an hour and more. We're talking about a serious wind. Now, right off of the island of Crete, there's a wind that comes over the mountain ranges. It comes from very high, and it begins to hit the waters there. It's known for causing storms. That's what we're seeing here. And so just the very language, it says, this wind which arose was called Euricadellum. Now, the word in the Greek here is northeast wind. That's what the word means. That the name of the wind was a northeast wind, and we have a transliteration here of that word. And so this is an awesome storm. Now I want you to try this morning, maybe for some of us, we just need to wake up a little. Look a little glazed to me. Paul the Apostle, put yourself, you want to wake up. Now, maybe we should show a movie or something on this, you know, the storm and Paul out there and maybe we should do a play or a drama. Or imagine him. He's out here. He's a prisoner. Imagine the ship. It's got 270 people or so on the ship. And all of a sudden, they hit this cyclone. The winds are blowing and the waves are coming. And you got to realize the water is splashing over the side. The boat is going up and down and the swells. They are caught in a radical, radical storm at sea. This is real. This is where he is. This is what's going on. And it says there in verse 16, "And running under the shelter of an island, Clauda," and they come under the shelter, and you can see it out there, a very small island. They take the skiff on board, what we know is the life raft. They bring it on. They put it on board. they secure it with difficulty, it says. And when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. And fearing lest they run aground on the Sardis sands, they struck the sail, and so we were driven. This is what happened here. They take the skiff, they get it on board, when they get under the shelter of an island, but they can't port at the island. There's probably not even a port there for the ship they're in, or they're not able to because of the storm. And so they get the skiff on board, and this is what they do. They take cables. They take cables, and they wrap them underneath the boat. And they tie cables over the bows, and they bring the cables across, and like a winch, they tighten the cables. They're tying the boat together so it doesn't break up in the storm. That's what it says when they undergirded the ship with cables. And so, I mean, the sailors are working hard. Everybody's involved, even the passengers. We're going to see that there. And it says, and when they undergird the ship with cables, fearing lest they should run aground against the Sardis sands. Again, off the tip of Africa there, the graveyard of ships, lest they be drifted over to the Sardis sands. Now realize, they're 400 miles at this time away from the Sardis sands. But these sailors know, during these times, how dangerous it is out there, and they know they can be taken 400 miles and crash on the Sardis sands. And so they're concerned about that. So what do? They undergird the ship, and they strike the sail, it says, and so we were driven. The word strike is a word for let down. In fact, it's used in verse 30 of this chapter for that very thing that the sailors wanted to let down the skiff. And so it means to let down. But the word sail is actually a word that could be translated sail, or it could be translated anchor. Really, literally, the word means the gear. It would literally read like this: they let down the gear. The gear could be the sail, the main sail, which would be torn up in a storm. You can guarantee they let that down. It could be they let down the anchor. It could be they let down other things that had to do with the gear of the ship. Probably they did it all. They probably let down the sail. They definitely probably threw out the anchor to slow them down so they didn't run aground on the Sardis sands there. And so we see that this is the situation. And because, verse 18, we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. This didn't happen. This wasn't a couple hours. You notice what it says? The next day. We were continually being exceedingly tempest-tossed, and the next day they lightened the ship. On the third day, oh wow, on the third day we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. Now not the sailors, not the crew, the passengers, they're throwing tackle of the ship overboard. Things to help them sail, things they might need later on. They got to throw it over because they got to lighten the load, lest they be torn to pieces, lest they crash, lest the ship be broken up and can't handle all the weight. So they lightened the load. It says in verse 20, and now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. Wow. Imagine the scene. We're going to learn that they were out on this ship for 14 days in this storm. 14 days. At this point, it's probably on the 13th day. It says the stars there, that they neither saw the sun or the stars. Why is that important? What does that tell us? There's clouds, there's a storm. Yeah, but there's more than that. That's how they navigated themselves in those days, by the stars and the sun, and they had no idea where they were. No idea that we might be on the Sardis sands anymore. We can't see anything, we don't know anything. We've been out here for 14 days. You know, I think it's interesting too. It says, but after long abstinence from food, we're going to learn for 14 days they didn't eat anything. Now, there was food on board. Were they spiritual? Were they really spiritual? Were all the pagans fasting and praying? Might have been to their own deities and gods, but I don't think so. I think they were probably seasick and not able to cook the food. Realize they didn't just whip out the frozen burrito, throw it in the microwave down below the deck. They had grain. Then wheat. Okay, let's make some bread. How many of us in here can make bread out of wheat? A couple, I think, maybe. Not many. I couldn't, trust me. Wheat? What's that? That's the bread I get when I go to Subway. They say you want wine or wheat. I don't even know if I know what wheat looks like. But anyways, they couldn't even cook. I mean, they didn't have their stoves and their ovens, and they turned them on and set them. They didn't have their bread makers, and you just pour it in and it's done. I mean, I can't even cook in a bread maker. That's besides the point. But they didn't have these kinds of conveniences, and they didn't have these things. They were probably cooking over an open fire right on the deck. They couldn't do it. They couldn't even cook. They probably didn't want to eat. They were at the point of giving up hope, and it's done. We're dead. It's over. There's no way we're getting out of this one. It's at this time that the leader stands up. The prisoner. Remember that. Oh, prisoner. Who's in prison now? All of these people in prison to the fear of death. And the man of God who's got a hope in Jesus Christ arises. It says in verse 21, after the long absence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them. I can just see him standing in the midst of them. The whole idea of standing, it indicates that possibly they're sitting. Just hopeless. You can just see it, they're done. Again, remember what it said there in verse 20. It says, all hope that we'd be saved was finally given up. They had quit. Maybe they stopped even sailing the boat and trying to work, and it's over, we're dead. And Paul stands up in the midst of them. Men! I told you so. Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. Now, you know, that has got to be funny. I mean, where in the Bible does it say, I told you so? Right here. You guys should have listened. But remember the first point we looked at, the leader that's learned. He was learned, he understood, and he said, but you know what? When they didn't listen, he just kept his mouth shut. He didn't go off on them. He waits 14 days. Everyone's ready to just die. They've given up all hope. And he says to them, you guys should have listened. But he doesn't stop there. I mean, because that'd be kind of really mean. I mean, think about it. Everyone's ready to die. Should have told you. Die. But he didn't do that. It's like, he said, you should have listened to me. He's getting their attention. Hey, I was right from the beginning. Now, he's doing that for a reason, not just to ridicule them or to show them they should have, you know, listened to him. He was the right one. He's doing it to show them, hey, listen, I know my God. And my God knows what he's doing. And he's the God of creation. And he's the God of the seas. And he says to them, verse 22, and now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong and to whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as he told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island. Now, I think it's so interesting here. And now we come to the letter E, and we're going to look at ear. Paul had an ear to hear the Lord in the midst of this situation. That's a leader. And that is a characteristic of a good leader. Someone that can hear chaos, craziness, life and death. And he finally waits till they're all done with all of their own efforts and all of their own things, and they're trying to do anything because their hope, their salvation was in their boat. And it was over. It was the boat that was going to save him. The boat couldn't. Paul waits till they're all done. He stands up and he says, listen, the God to whom I belong and to whom I serve appeared to me last night through an angel. And he told me that he's not only going to spare me, but he's going to spare all who sail with me. Every one of you are going to be safe. Who's the leader now? Who's taking leadership? Who's leading the whole crew? And you're going to see from this point on, Paul is clearly the leader of all. He's going to tell the Roman soldiers what to do. He's going to tell the centurions what to do. And they're going to obey him. It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing of God's anointing upon his life, because his ear to hear the Lord. You know, we all are called to be leaders in some degree. Some in maybe more weighty matters than others. We're all called. I mean, for the housewife here, for the mom here today, the leadership that God has called her to exercise over her children is huge. And these are things you need, because any mom knows the chaos that can occur in a day with children. In my house, we have four young kids. My oldest is six. Let me tell you about some chaos. Well, for you moms, you don't need me to tell you. But the things that can occur and the need for leadership in myself and when I'm not there for my wife to have that ear to hear the Lord. What happens when you, Christian, unsaved family members, a tragedy strikes, everyone gives up all hope, everything's lost, what's going to happen? Are you going to stand up? Are you going to stand in the midst of them? Do you have an ear to hear the Lord? Paul prophesies here. Now that's heavy. Paul says, listen, I want to tell you what's going to happen. Whoa, that takes courage. That takes faith. That's a leader, someone that is hearing from the Lord and has direction and brings hope to the hurting. And every one of us as believers are called to be that hope and that life to the world, to share with them the love of God and to carry them through times of difficulty so that they might see our faith, they might see who our God is. It's not just a message we preach to people, but it's a life we live. And as we are people that are learned in the things of life and of God, and as we walk into those situations, and when people reject our counsel, when we say, I don't think it's wise you do that, and they do it, and then their life is almost at the end, what do we do to them? Do we just come to them and say, see, I told you so? But we say, you know what? What I told you before, you see now that it was right. And hopefully that brings a little bit of stability and confidence in what you're about to say. And I want to tell you right now that my God, to whom I belong and to whom I serve, he's got hope for you. He's got a plan for you. He's going to take care of you. He's going to strengthen you. And I want to be that spiritual leader that you have called me to be, Lord. And I want to have an ear to hear what your Spirit is saying to me, Lord. And give me a word for these people, saved or unsaved. Give me a word for them. Help me to speak something. Lord, what do we do in this situation? So now the prisoner rises up as the leader because he's filled with the Spirit of God, because he has an ear to hear what the Lord is saying. And he says to the whole crew and to all the passengers there, he says to them, verse 24, do not be afraid. The Lord says to him, but this is what he's telling him. This is what God spoke to me. You must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted you all who sail with you. And at that point, everyone listened. They don't care about Paul or him going before Caesar, but granted all who sail. Yeah, that's me. Therefore, he says, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told to me. I love this. I believe God. I believe in my God. I believe in it. Look at his faith. Look at his faith. God speaks and he does something with it. He has an ear to hear. He has a heart to obey. I believe God. I believe that what he has said to me is going to happen. And therefore, you can take courage because my God is the true God. And that's what he's saying. Realize he's dealing with pagans. They have all kinds of different deities. They've been doing all their prayers and everything to the God of the stars and the God of the sea and the God of the wind and everything. They've been giving it all they had. But my God, to whom I belong. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like you belong to the Lord? To whom I belong and to whom I serve. You only serve God truly when you realize you belong to God. Your life becomes a sacrifice and a service unto him because your life isn't your own because you've been bought at a price. You're his slave. When you realize that God chose you and he pulled you out of your sin and he took you to be his own, you realize you belong to the Lord. And when that really comes into your mind, when you really realize, I belong to God. I'm his. He loves me. He's bought me. He's purchased me. It motivates you to say, yeah, and I serve him. What else would I give him? For it's just a reasonable act of service to present my body as a living sacrifice to him to whom I belong and to whom I serve. Paul's spiritual sight in his leadership, his ear to hear what the Lord is saying. However, we must, verse 26, we must run aground on a certain island. So, prophetically speaking, verse 27, but when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea. So we don't really know how long it was between the time Paul spoke and the 14th night. Could have been a few days. Could have been the next night. Think about it. They're thinking, well, how are we going to be saved? Again, all hope is still lost. But Paul is keeping his confidence. They weren't praying, God, bring day. The word is wishing for day to come. It's much like our country. They pray. Oh, when there's tragedy, they pray for day to come. Oh, we're praying. And you know, you hear people saying, we need your prayers right now. And you think, yesterday you didn't need prayers, you didn't even pray. Yesterday you were voting for abortion. Yesterday you were saying that we should take the Ten Commandments out of schools. We should get rid of God from our society. We should take his name off our dollar bill, but now you're praying. Wow, what changed? Did you get born again? No. It's a word of terminology that is used for we hope things will work out. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a hospital and we've been in the intensive care ward and there and many patients are there and different family members and people, obviously, that I'm there for, and then other people, and families get to know each other there, and you know, they're saying, keep the faith. What faith? Because after dialogue, you know they don't believe in the Lord. What faith? We're praying. Praying to who? This is the world's concept. When I'm in trouble, pray. Pray to who? They don't know who they're praying to. They're wishing, oh, I hope it works out. Help. Whoever's out there, help. But the Christian can pray. So different here. And as the soldiers were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff into the sea under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, which is the front, Paul said to the centurion, third time Paul speaks here, Paul said to the centurion, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut the ropes of the skiff and let it fall. We find here that Paul speaks again. Now, what we have here is the sailors are saying, you know what? Hey, we're by the shore. It's night. The anchors are down. Let's go pretend like we're going to put anchors down, you know, from the front of the ship there. And really, they're putting the skiff down and they're going to take off. Now, I want you to notice something here as we get into this. You're going to see God's sovereignty in his prophetic word. God has declared something. Everyone's going to be saved. But you're going to find here that in that, there's a responsibility that we have. And I want to point that out. I want to point, because we talk a lot about God's sovereignty in our church. We talk a lot about God being in control and God being able and God being almighty and God being who He is. And it's so important for us to understand. At the same time, I fear sometimes that because we understand that or believe in that, we think if God has spoken, then I'll just kick back and let Him do His thing. And I think that's a big mistake, and I think we're going to see that here in our text. But we come here, and Paul says to the centurion, he says, unless these men, watch this, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Now, the third characteristic that we're going to find here and glean from this passage, this principle, is that Paul was alert. And that would cover our word, the letter A for lead. Alert. He was alert. He was aware of what's going on. And that is such an important thing for a good leader. A good leader has to be aware of what's going on. Whether that's, you know, a dad at home, whether that's a mom, whether that's on the job, whether that's in a spiritual context, whether that's in there are so many seminars today on leadership. You can turn on the TV and there's this show and that show, and you can get this tape and order this and go to this seminar and read this book on leadership and making money and millions, and you can be a millionaire in a few years and all of these things. And everything's about inspiring people to be charismatic and to be risk takers and to be leaders and to be hard workers and to go out and to, you know, get the things that you want. And but in the church and in Christ, and leadership is something that is so lacked, something that is so tragically forgotten about. And we become nothing more than sheep that follow. And that might be okay in a certain context. The Bible does call us sheep, but sheep follow. And any good leader is really led. And you're a Christian. And when you're out amongst the world, and even amongst the church, based on the giftings God's given, there's no question there's a spiritual gift given, Romans 12, of leadership, speaking in the context of church, in the context of church government. That's not what I'm talking about so much here today. I'm talking about being people that are spiritually fit and ready for what God brings our way. Being people that are learned in the things of God, not just in the classroom, in the sanctuary, but people that are learned in life, people that are practically applying the things that they know and doing them and have gained wisdom and experience, people that have an ear to hear what the Spirit is saying and are being led by the Lord, and people that are aware of what's happening around them. Are you aware right now today of what's happening around you? Are you alert? Are you aware of what's happening in your friends' lives? How they're doing spiritually? Are you discerning? Are you aware of what's going on today in your life or your unsaved family's life? Or the thing? Are you alert? Are you in your own little world, doing your own thing? Well, God spoke. God said He'd save my family, so God will do it, and off I go. Well, God spoke to Paul. And He said, Paul, I'm going to spare your life and all that are with you. Right there in verse 24. And then now here in verse 30, He says here, He tells her, verse 31, He says to the soldiers, unless they stay on the ship, you can't be saved. I just told you you could. I'm telling you now, if they don't stay on the ship, you can't be saved. And there could be a very practical reason, not just supernaturally here, very practical reason why they can't be saved. Because the sailors, if they escape, who's going to get the ship into the shore? The soldiers and the passengers? And so, again, and I want you to see the practicality in these things. God is so practical. We make God so unpractical. But He's so practical. God has given us common sense and wisdom and skills. And God has designed us and created us and created His own world to work in that way. And so Paul says here, as he's aware of what's happening, he's alert, he says, unless these men stay in the ship, you can't be saved. Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. Notice who's in charge. Notice who's leading. Paul's telling the soldiers what to do. They're obeying him. Amazing. And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, today is the 14th day you have waited and continued without food and have eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you. Wow. Again we see it. Again we see God's sovereignty and man's responsibility and the practical side to these things. Listen to what he says here. He says in verse 33, day was about to dawn. It's about time. Again, they're anchored. They're by the shore. They're ready to go in. As soon as daylight comes, he says, today's the 14th day. You've waited. Continue with anything. He says, therefore, this is what I want you to do. Notice he's leading, again, the entire ship, all the people on it. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival. Wait a second. I thought you said your God was going to spare us. Yeah, He is. But you need some food because you're going to need strength to swim. There's a practical side to it. And I fear that we get into this mindset of God's sovereignty and that God is going to do it all, and we don't have to do anything. In our theology, which obviously you hear me preach and we talk about so much, which is true, God is going to do it, but God is going to lead us in that. And God is going to use practical means to fulfill that. And so Paul says here, he says, therefore I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival. Interesting, the word survival here is the word salvation. And he's not speaking of obviously spiritual, but physical. It's again the word, it means deliverance. Since not a hair, I love it. This is for your survival, since not a hair is even going to fall from your head. And it was a Jewish way of saying that God's going to protect your life. And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged, and they also took food themselves. We come to our fourth point, which is under the letter D, which is demonstrate. Paul demonstrated to them what to do. He took bread. He broke it. First he tells them, he says, here, this is what you need to do. You need to take nourishment. This is for your survival. And then he takes it. That's leadership. He takes it, he breaks it, and it says he ate it himself. And then notice what it says in verse 36. And when they were all encouraged, they also took for themselves. It was his demonstration, not his declaration, that moved them. Parents, what an important lesson we need to learn. It's not what we tell our kids. And what a mistake if you're one of those parents that's saying, you know, son, daughter, do what I say, don't do what I do. That is horrible leadership. That is not a way that anyone's going to ever respect you. Imagine if I was up here at the pulpit and I said, now, you know, you need to repent of your sins. Now, do what I say, not what I do. I don't really repent in my life. I don't really think it's important. But you need to. The Bible says, and I just, what kind of respect would I get? What kind of authority would I have to speak? I say, you need to be born again. I don't really think I need to, but you need to. And just do what I say. Don't look at my life. Don't do what I do. It wouldn't work. The key to leadership is not so much a declaration. This is what you need to do. Here, do this, do this, do this. But it's demonstration. You know, Jesus, that's what he did to his disciples. He said, you guys need to be servants. So he got down, he washed their feet, and then he taught them on servanthood. And he says, now do as I've done to you. It was Paul that told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4 there in verse 12, he says, don't let them despise you, but be an example to the believers. Show them, don't let them despise, let them respect you by your example. It was Peter that said to the elders there in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3, that you're to lead by example, not as lords over them, but being an example to the flock. Leadership must come through someone who is ready to demonstrate to people what it means to do what they're saying, to be a Christian, to live the life. Paul's here with a bunch of unbelievers. How much more we with the unbelievers? We don't just tell them about God, we show them who He is. We have a word for them in those seasons of hopelessness. We're aware of what's going on and we're warning people and directing. And we demonstrate how to live it when it comes down to it. I think there's so much for us to glean in this chapter here and so much that God has for us in these pages of Scripture. It says in verse 27, in all we were 270 persons. 76 persons on the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. Now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay with a beach on which they planned to run the ship if possible. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. They just untied them and left them there. Meanwhile, loosing the rudder ropes, which would be the oars that would be under the ship. You see maybe those pictures of oars coming out of the side of the ship. It's probably what this ship looked like. Loosing the rudder ropes, and they hoisted the main sail to the wind, and they made for shore. Hoisting the sail, beginning to row the ship towards the beach as fast as they could go, as they wanted to run aground. And it says, and striking a place where two seas met. So they're still making way for the beach, for the bay, striking a place where two seas there met. It says, they ran the ship aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. And so again, the prow's the front of the ship, the stern is the rear of the ship, it sticks in. William Ramsey talks about, from his studies of these areas of where these two seas would come together, where there'd be mud, and the ship would stick in the mud, and so it was stuck. They couldn't get it out. They couldn't do anything. They were stuck, and then the waves are beating on the back of the ship, and after everything the ship has gone through, it's starting to break to pieces. And it says, now watch this. You want to see God's sovereignty again in the prophetic word. Now the soldiers planned was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. That was typical protocol. Remember, if the soldier loses the prisoner, he has to serve that prisoner's time or sentence. Soldiers are like, we're not letting these guys get away. They're dead. But God had his hand on it. But the centurion, wanting to save Paul, kept them from their plot. God leading a centurion, an unsaved man. Realize that God has got control over kings, authorities, and all people. And God will accomplish his will in ways that will just amaze you, in ways that you just don't understand. And it says in the soldiers, but the centurion, verse 43, wanting to save Paul, kept from their purpose and commanded those who could swim that they should jump overboard first and go to land. The rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of ship. So it was that they all escaped safely to land. You know, it is really interesting here that this is the first place in the New Testament that you find surfing. For you surfers. It says there that so the rest, some on boards. You can just see kind of, you know, Paul on his board catching the swell. No. But the point is they all escaped. Every one of them escaped. And God's will and word was fulfilled. And Paul has just begun his new ministry as a prisoner, leading the entire crew and all that are there, because next week we're going to look at chapter 28 and see how he then goes on an island and becomes the leader because of his spiritual leadership. The characteristics of a good leader. Church, I pray that we be a well-rounded people. We'd be learned. We would be people of common sense. Something that I think we've so lacked today in our generation. People of just common, basic wisdom, and being able to use that in the things that God has called us to. People that have an ear to hear, how important that is. An ear to hear what the Spirit is saying, a direction that the Lord is taking us. Faith enough to speak that. People that are alert and aware of what's going on around us, that we might give proper leadership and we might share with people and direct them. And people that demonstrate our Christianity, that demonstrate what it is we're trying to declare. That after our declaration, there's always demonstration. And I find that if we put these four truths into our lives, and again, an easy way to remember it is just lead. Lead. And as we lead and we find these principles, we find that the Lord's going to use us, as God did use Paul. And God's going to bless and really do a work. And I pray that we might step it up a notch in our lives, in our walks, and allow the Lord to use us and minister to us and through us. And I pray God would really minister to you and has today from His Word. And today I encourage you this afternoon, go and read over the text again. Let the Holy Spirit minister to you, and let the Lord bring forth the things. Let Him put you in that situation and feel what Paul maybe felt there as waves are crashing over and they're going through these swells and having an ear to hear in the midst of something like that. But that's God's desire for us, and that's God's heart for us. Because ultimately we're called to lead people to Christ. And to do that, we're going to need more than just sometimes a Bible verse, but a real heart and a real understanding of the Lord.